following is a presentation of Learfield IMG College. From the Georgia Southern Sports Network, powered by Learfield IMG College.
Wings up, Eagle Nation! Touchdown, Georgia Southern!
This is Inside Eagle Nation, your all-access look into Eagle athletics.
Take a look through all the other action in Georgia Southern athletics this past week. A lot of road action. A lot of teams hitting the old I-16 out of town.
Getting on the steel horse and taking us to parts north, south, west, wherever. Can't really go too much farther east.
Now let's return to the Learfield IMG College studios. Here are your hosts, Colin Lacey and Danny Reed.
That's a fact, Jack.
Take number two, try this again for Inside Eagle Nation Live, episode number 121 here on Inside Eagle Nation. Again, if you're listening to this on podcast form, nothing a whole lot has changed the last couple of weeks. But now, doing the last couple live here on Facebook Live, you can get your questions and comments in on Facebook Live stream. Text us 912-274-3607 or tweet us at GS Sports Network. Happy Tuesday. Let's try this again.
Happy Tuesday. This is momentous because I'm actually wearing Terry Harvin's headset.
It's the first one I found.
We had to open up the glass case where this goes into after each football season. We had to get it out of retirement because we needed one that worked, but we're all good now.
It's not retirement. Just tuck it away and for hibernation.
It's all pause, kind of like we were for the last year.
Yeah. But as always, Inside Eagle Nation is presented by our good friends at Arcola Septic. Arcola Septic is your premier septic services provider to Bullock, Bryan, and adjoining counties, and a great family-owned business that's run by a pair of Georgia Southern alumni. Make sure to give them a call at 912-318-7939 or visit them online at Arcola Septic. For both commercial and residential customers, their more than 10 years of experience can help you out with pumping and servicing your septic system, drain field repairs, new system installation, and all of your septic needs. Remember to follow them on Facebook, Arcola Septic, yesterday's Meals on Wheels. Getting to the point of the season where a couple of the sports starting to wind down. We talked about men's and women's basketball finishing up down in Pensacola last week. But a big week, not necessarily the number of games, but a momentous week for Georgia Southern this past week.
In terms of baseball, something happened last Saturday that had not happened in a decade. And in the case of you and I, calling baseball games, something that you and I personally had never seen live. And that'll be most of our discussion today. We'll also have a little bit of softball. We'll sprinkle in some stuff with spring football starting in about a week and a half, culminating with the spring game on April 24th on that Friday night over at Paulson Stadium. Even though we may seem like we're thinning out a little bit, there's always a way to talk about something that is going on, at least as we get towards the final couple of stages of the athletic season. And coming up on this week's edition of Blue White Weekly, you'll see the top 10 athletic moments from this past year. You got a pretty good idea about what number one is. Maybe number two and number three, but number one shouldn't be too hard to think about.
No. But as we dive through everything Georgia Southern athletics in the past week, Georgia Southern men's golf at the Auburn Tiger Invitational Monday through today. They'll finish it up over at the RTJ Grand National in Opelika. Through two rounds in day one yesterday, Georgia Southern finished 12th after two rounds. They will have a 10 a.m. shotgun start today. Mason Williams shot a 1-under for the day over the two rounds yesterday to lead Georgia Southern. He is tied for 30th individually. And then next weekend, or this coming weekend, I should say.
Biggie.
A big one as the Schenkel Invitational over at the Forest Heights Country Club. That's Friday through Sunday here in Statesboro.
A little bit bummed that we're going to be out of town as part of our spring break baseball trip, going to Georgia Tech tomorrow, knock on wood, weather permitting, and then Detroit this weekend to start conference play. But knowing that the Schenkel was called off last year in the very early stages of the COVID-19 pandemic, awesome to know that it's back and to make us feel like, okay, this is another thing that we are getting back that we didn't have before.
Georgia Southern women's golf heads out to Arizona this weekend to the Oak Creek Golf Club in Sedona. And they're turning this into a pretty cool trip. I think they were talking about going to the Grand Canyon a little bit later on this week. But Saturday through Sunday in the Red Rocks Invitational for Emily Kufeld and company.
Arizona is not that close to Georgia.
No. That's what I hear.
That is a true spring break trip.
Men's tennis. Tough weekend in Conway. Fell to UNC Wilmington 6-1 on Saturday, and then against the host Coastal Carolina 4-1 on Sunday. Bouncing around all this week, Wednesday at 11:30 a.m. first serve tomorrow at the Wallace Tennis Center against South Carolina State. Friday, they make their way to Charleston to take on the Citadel at noon. And then on Sunday, they return home for the Wofford Terriers, a 12 noon first serve as well. Georgia Southern women's tennis didn't play this past weekend because of a postponement on Tuesday against Presbyterian. They will have three on the road this weekend. It starts in Savannah against the Tigers of Savannah State on Wednesday, Saturday at South Alabama for a 10 a.m. first serve, and then 10 a.m. first serve on Sunday as well against the Trojans of Troy over in Troy, Alabama. Georgia Southern women's soccer fell to Florida last Thursday, 3-1. But talking to Chris Adams, really encouraged by the growth of this team he's seen, and especially against a really, really good SEC opponent.
This was a 2-1 game late in the second half. Now, Florida added the insurance goal, but being that close, that's something you can build on.
They will have their final spring match next Saturday, the 27th, at Ole Miss. Georgia Southern Track and Field hosted the first event in 2021 in the Gatta Classic and ended up winning it by 73 points. Megan Lynch won the 400-meter hurdles with a eighth-best time in school history. They will have 2.5 weeks until the Tiger Twilight Midweek hosted by Savannah State.
Tiger Twilight Midweek.
That's when you have to kind of slow down, say it as you get a little bit of momentum.
Take it piece by piece.
Yeah. Georgia Southern softball fell to number 20, South Carolina, 9-1 on Wednesday. And then they were shut down because of COVID this past weekend, so lost the series at Louisiana. That has been postponed, along with the doubleheader that was supposed to be played tomorrow over at Eagle Field against Mercer. But Georgia Southern hoping to get the series against ULM Saturday and Sunday over at Eagle Field. It'll be a doubleheader starting at 1 o'clock on Saturday, and then a single game, 11 a.m., the first pitch on Sunday.
And that represents the only series that softball got in last year in conference play before the shutdown. And you hate that they've had to go through this to be on pause for at least 10 days. But if they can get through all of their negative tests, they can turn that into a positive and get back to the field and get back on track after what was a really good weekend before at the Eagle Round Robin.
And then you talked about it earlier. You've got spring football starting up in the next couple weeks. It all culminates with the spring game on April the 24th being set for a Friday night.
This was the plan last year before it was lopped off after six practices, but the hope is that everybody's healthy, safe, and ready to roll, and the plan is to also air that spring football broadcast on ESPN+.
Ooh.
And try to tie that in somehow with the reverse raffle. And we know Terry and the folks at the EFA who work all year round and trying to get that going after last year. I mean, everything just got turned upside down last year. But as we inch towards normalcy, maybe an abridged version of normalcy, but I know the reverse raffle means a lot to a lot of people. And the one that I had a chance to go to a couple of years ago, I've never seen that many Eagle fans in one place that wasn't a Georgia Southern football game. So I know how much passion there is behind something like that.
Now, a special edition of Eagle Tales this week. We alluded to it a little bit earlier. This weekend was a momentous weekend for Georgia Southern. We'll get into all the history that took place, especially on Saturday against the UAB Blazers. But Mason McWhorter hits for the cycle. You and I talked about it, how it was the first cycle either one of us had ever seen live. But for this week's edition of Eagle Tales, what is the rarest or the craziest thing you have seen in your time in baseball?
All right, I'm going to give you two.
Okay.
And you've heard both of these before, but for a lot of people tuning in and getting a chance to go back and listen to this, they probably wouldn't have heard these. Number one, this would have been 4th of July 2010 when I was with the Charleston River Dogs. Well, both these are River Dogs stories. But we had a Independence Day game against the Asheville Taurus, only time that we were playing Asheville that year. Our standout center fielder was a former first-round pick, Slade Heathcott. He grounds a ball down the right field line into the corner at Riley Park, and you've been to Riley Park. You know how the dimensions are a little bit quirky and how the bullpen sticks out with the sandbox and all that. Well, there's trouble handling the baseball in the right field corner, and Heathcott could run anyway, so I'm thinking, okay, he's got a shot at a triple. Then he just keeps going. He ends up crossing home plate. Outfielders and everybody that's surrounding the play have their hands up, but the issue is that the right fielder has the ball in his glove.
Whoops.
Two umpires in the South Atlantic League. So one's watching the bases. The other is watching to make sure that the ball is fair. So after
they ensure that the ball's fair. Whatever happens after that, if they see it, if they don't, it just depends. What happened was the ball had actually rolled through a very small hole at the bottom corner of the right field fence. Someone had tossed it back in, and the right fielder caught it. But he still had his hands up to say that the ball went out of play, which would be automatically a double.
Right.
Book roll double. The umpires had to get together to figure out, okay, what just happened? Because he can't have his hands up and have the ball in his glove at the same time. He's trying to tell them what happened. But for the two umpires that are watching their parts of the play, they would not have seen that. All the while, Heathcott crosses home plate for what at that point was an inside-the-park home run. They must have talked for 5 or 10 minutes. Joe Miklik was still the manager of the Asheville Taurus.
Oh, I can imagine that went well.
They couldn't change the call because neither of them actually saw what happened, so they had to go with what actually happened. Oh. So Slade Heathcott got an inside-the-park home run on a ball that rolled through a hole in the fence, and it was his first career home run.
And I'm going to go out on a limb, knowing Miklik, that's the last play he saw that day.
Somehow he ended up staying in that game. He did get thrown out later on. That was the first game of the series. I don't know why we ended up starting the series on Sunday, but he did get thrown out later on that series, but it wasn't related to that play.
Wow.
Because you got to think, okay, if they didn't see it, then all he can do is say what he saw and what he saw his players do. But if the umpires didn't see it, literally didn't see it, it's not as if they missed it in a sense of missing the call, which as an umpire you can relate to. They actually missed it because they didn't see it. So there's not a whole lot that he could have done to plead his case because they never had their eyes on that part of the play.
Ooh, I don't know that it's mattered to him a whole lot what he can and can't do.
But if you've been familiar with Joe Miklik's arguments over the years, he's not manager in Class A ball anymore. Last he was doing the Frisco Rough Riders in Double A, and he's been a coach in professional baseball for more than 30 years. He's one of the more revered names, especially in the Southeast, but that's an extremely unique one. But the one that I guarantee that you wouldn't have heard, and I don't know if anybody I know would have heard, I've seen a 5-strikeout inning. A lot of times you hear about a 4-strikeout inning, and that's happened in the bigs. It happens maybe once every couple years. And you can have as many strikeouts in an inning as possible until you get 3 outs that actually stay either in the catcher's mitt or you're able to throw them to first base. But the pitcher that day for the River Dogs, he went 2 innings because he was going to go 2 innings. He ends up coming in for the ninth. Ironically, we're at State Mutual Stadium playing the Rome Braves. This is 2011. He had just gotten drafted out of Longwood University. Mark Montgomery was his name. The bill was wicked slider, being great arm, but wicked slider. He ends up striking out 2 guys in the inning who reach on wild pitches. Now, that's not totally out of the ordinary. 1 isn't bad. 2's a little bit different. But he ends up striking out 3 more to complete the side, plus 2. So it's technically a 5-strikeout inning. It's never happened in the history of Major League Baseball, because it took a while to look it up going into the next day. It had only happened 3 other times in other professional leagues. I think it happened a couple times in Japan, and I want to say there was some independent ball where it had happened. I think it's happened in spring training once or twice, but as we know, those games are not official. So I've seen an inside-the-park home run on a ball that actually rolled out of play, and a 5-strikeout inning, which I highly doubt I will ever see another 5-strikeout inning. But yeah, then Saturday, first cycle.
Yeah, I would hope not.
And that was one where, and I've got the call saved somewhere. It's been 10 years, but having to consciously be aware of the fact that, wait, that was a 5-strikeout inning. You didn't even know that was a thing.
Yeah.
4-strikeout innings, you've probably seen at some point. Never a 5-strikeout inning, though.
The one I'll give you, and I know you've never seen it because we've talked about you've never seen 1, let alone 2. I have called a no-hitter by the same guy in back-to-back outings. When I was working with the Sun Belt Summer League, a guy named Tucker Simpson, one of the biggest guys I've ever seen in my life. He pitched at Troy, coincidentally enough, and then he
was let go by the coaching staff at Troy, and he was trying to find another home, and, well, he found a home with the Miami Marlins after this. He came in, threw a no-hitter, and everybody was really excited. It was the first one in Sun Belt League history. And the next outing, he goes, and we get to the sixth inning. He's got a perfect game through six innings, just 5 days later. And get to the seventh, still got a perfect game. Eighth inning comes around, he gives up a walk. And I was kind of ticked at that point. But he finishes off the no-hitter, back-to-back no-hit inning, or no-hit appearances. The last time he ever saw the Sun Belt League because he signed a free agent contract with Miami the next day.
Yeah, they'd be good enough to do it.
Wow. Back-to-back no-hitters.
By the same guy.
By the same guy.
Had you called his team in between those 5 days?
Yeah, I mean, so I had called the game, and he was with the Douglasville Bulls at the time, or the Carrollton. I can't remember if they had made the move to Carrollton yet or not.
Same franchise.
Yeah, same idea. Todd Pratt was the manager. But so that's the team that I called every day. Okay. And so I had called the four in between, but back-to-back no-hitters by the same guy in back-to-back outings.
I've seen one no-hitter, but not for a team that I've covered. But to have your team do two in a week with the same guy, that's, I think in the bigs it's happened once.
Yeah.
The Johnny Vandermeer back in the 30s with the Reds. So that's
pretty cool.
That's history.
So that is our odd edition of Eagle Tales this week.
You still need to put the picture of Roger up just to – this is his segment.
We'll get to Roger in a little bit. But for Georgia Southern baseball, it was a four-game week all right here at J.I. Clement Stadium. It started on Tuesday against the Georgia Bulldogs. Fell 5-2 in that game, and there was a couple of plays that you and I talked about it throughout the game that really changed – it was a hot shot down the left field line that probably would have scored one for Georgia Southern, but it was snagged by the UGA third baseman. But the biggest one is...
turned into a double play that ended the inning.
In the eighth inning, Mason McWhorter hit a long fly ball to left field. It was a heck of a catch by Ben Anderson out in center field, but he didn't necessarily rob the home run. It was a leaping catch at the wall. It would have been off the wall and at least scored one, but... I think if Mason hits that same ball in the weekend, it's gone, and that's a completely different ball game.
Just chilly enough, not any wind. It went as far as it could. Just give you an idea of how hard he hit that ball was the first pitch that he saw. It would have cut it to one had it left, because at that point it was a 5-1 game. And like you said, Ben Anderson did not sit on top of the wall and keep this from going out, but he did take away probably a two-run double, yep, at least in my estimation. It was going to score at least one, probably two with two outs, and who knows, Mason may have gotten the triple that day instead of having to wait until Saturday to get his triple. And then even so, in the ninth inning, two outs, Jason Swan doubles in a run, then you load the bases, Mason gets intentionally walked to put the tying man on to bring up the potential winning run in Austin Thompson. Look, Austin has not hit a grand slam in his career, but he's been very good with the bases loaded. It was a bit of a gamble by George, at least that we talked about on the broadcast, but Austin pops out, it ends the game. But to see the Eagles fight literally until the final out and give themselves a chance to knock off a top 10 team, it was encouraging enough to see how the rest of the week would play out, because I think it had a factor on how Georgia Southern performed against UAB.
It was a series sweep against the Blazers, back-to-back weekend series that Georgia Southern sweeps. Last week it was Towson. This weekend against the Blazers of UAB, it started with an 11-7 victory on Friday, 15-4 on Saturday, and then 9-5 on Sunday. And this was a weekend that the top five of this Georgia Southern order, now obviously when you score 11, 15, and 9, Georgia Southern did pretty well at the plate.
Yeah.
But especially the top five in the order for Georgia Southern, you think of Jason Swan, Mason McWhorter, Austin Thompson, Noah Ledford, really all got everything going.
Now that Swan is back in the leadoff spot where he hit for about half of his freshman year in 2018, we know how good Mason has been in the number two hole, and that's been the case for 3 years now. I don't know why he works so well there. He just does. There's no need to question it. And with Austin Thompson, you think about our past conversations with Rodney Hennon. He hit third his entire freshman season,
back in 2018. And according to Skip, that's the first time he had ever had a true freshman bat third for an entire year. And Austin started to get it around late April, early May, had that 11-game hitting streak going into the conference tournament. Big Lead is going to hit cleanup until Rapture. And then you've got Christian Avan, who's by far having his best season. He's always been a solid player, always a contributor, but he's really bumping up the stats, hitting close to 400. He's hitting with some power, hit his first home run over the weekend, but with the conditions, not that it was necessarily gale force winds blowing out, but it was warm. Ball was really flying for both teams. More so for Georgia Southern, but the ball was really flying.
We talk about Georgia Southern getting off to a fast start a lot with Coach Hennen, and Mason made sure of that this entire weekend. Home runs in the first inning on Friday and Saturday, and then follows that up with a little dinky fly ball to center field to score Swan.
Yeah.
But Mason being able to do that in the number two hole, second batter of the bottom of the first inning each day, I think really set the tone of what Georgia Southern was going to do that day each day.
Getting to Friday, it's a hit and run that you probably saw the video of this on social media, but Jason Swan's off on the pitch. It's a two-strike pitch, and it's a fastball about, Mason's taller than me, but I'm going to say about chest high, and he just hammered one about 400 feet over the wall in right center field. I'm going to guess it went into the pond. I don't know if they fished it out, but it was one of those where you knew immediately that it was gone, part of a three-run inning. And Georgia Southern had to rally because UAB scored six runs in the fourth. They got a home run of their own over the monster. Jess Davis, their center fielder, I think is a really good player.
Yeah.
I think he's a shoe-in to be All-Conference USA at the end of the year. And the Eagles had to battle back. They scored the next eight runs, gave up a run in the ninth, but still won by four. And then on Saturday, who knew what we were in for when Mason comes up in the first inning, hits another bomb. Then his next at bat in the next inning, two-out triple to straightaway center. Davis almost caught it. And while he's coming up that third time, we've joked a bunch about, he's halfway to the cycle. He's got single, double, homer, double. He needs only two more to get the cycle because Eagles haven't had one since Sean Payne in 2011. But he had homer and triple out of the way. Mace is not a big triple guy. Not a whole lot of guys on this team are triple guys. Noah Ledford was the triple guy on this team before Mason. It is. Think about that one for a second. And we would do this all the time. But, he's got the two toughest out of the way. He's already top 10 in school history in doubles. He's going to put the ball in play at some point. Maybe this is the day that he gets it. Well, he decides to homer again. And a tank, straightaway center. So he has 11 total bases, three times up. He's already 3-for-3 with two home runs. Then his next time up, first pitch RBI single to right. So he's 4-for-4. He's tied the career high in hits. He's driven in runs in all four of his at-bats, and I think we had mentioned during the game that Mason's last seven hits had driven in runs.
Yeah.
Which, number one, huge accomplishment to be able to do that, but also, number two, the guys on base that had to get on base ahead of him. You think about the bottom of the order, how good Parker Beatier was last week and who becomes an undercard where he usually would have been the four guy, but everything else that had happened when you hit 400 as a team in three games. But Swan being hot in the leadoff spot, and then you get to the seventh inning. And we know he needs a double, but he also needs another hit to get to five, and an Eagle hadn't had five hits in a game in 9 years. First pitch, he hits a bomb out of play to right field, and it one-hops the Parrish Building. Noah Ledford had done it against Georgia on Tuesday. I'm thinking, okay, I guess he's going for his third home run. No cycle, whatever. Very next pitch, liner to left, one hops the wall. And I remember thinking during the call that, okay, it's his fifth hit, this is a big moment. But then I look to the crowd, and I don't know why it's this, but I see Stacy Sykes up and just going crazy and think, and I'd forgotten that he needed a double for the cycle in the middle of the call. He's going to we've never seen a cycle. He needs a double for the cycle, pulls up, and then looks right at the dugout. Everybody's up. He gets the ball after the game. For all the games that we've called, I've done it for 20 years. You've done it for more than 10. Never seen a cycle live. It makes you feel like a little kid.
Yeah.
It was awesome.
I remember off the bat, at first I was like, he's got a double. This is it. And then I saw the ball carrying more than I thought it was going to, and I was like, oh, if he hits this out, he's going to be so ticked. then it bounced off the wall. He pulled it into second. You could see the biggest smile on his face. And it's a story we told on Sunday. John Mary was the third base umpire, but because of the rotation, has to move to second base whenever somebody moves to second. And so he's standing there, and I was talking to Mason after the game, and I didn't see it live, but you were telling me you saw that he reached out and shook John Mary's hand.
I think it's in one of the pictures that got taken, and Daryl Lynn saw it too.
And so I was talking to Mason after the game, and he was telling me that he thought it was gone off the bat, and he was really going to be ticked. He thought about stopping at second base. And so we were talking after the game while we were getting ready to do the Ford Clubhouse Report interview, and he's like, yeah, I felt kind of stupid because I was standing on second, and the umpire told me congratulations because Guy Malul comes over the PA and says it's the first cycle since 2011, and Mason thought that he was reaching his hand out like this to shake his hand. And so Mason reaches out and shakes his hand, and the umpire goes, no, I'm trying to get your Evo shield to take it to Hennin. And Mason's like, well, okay. What is it that Bill Engvall always talks about? A little bit of humble thump on the head.
Come on, John Barry, have a heart. You're just up for the cycle. Shake his hand.
But we were talking to him afterwards on the Ford Clubhouse Report, and to see what it meant to him when we asked him about what it was like for the first cycle in Georgia Southern history since 2011, just the fourth one all time, you could tell it meant something to him. For somebody that's been at Georgia Southern as long as he has, and he talked about coming back and the decision to come back to Georgia Southern for his extra year of eligibility because of COVID-19, you can tell how special Georgia Southern is and to be part of the history books. And granted, by the end of his career, he's going to be in the history books more than just for one of the cycles in Georgia Southern history. It's not going to be some rando that has a cycle but doesn't really have anything else. That's not Mason by any stretch of the imagination. But to be a part of the Georgia Southern history and a part of the Georgia Southern story means a lot to him.
He's already eighth in school history in doubles, and he has a very good chance to set the school record. And there's still 2 months left in the season. I think he needs only 11 more doubles to set the mark in that category. He has an outside chance to become the fifth guy in school history that has at least 300 hits. He would have to motor. He would have to stay on the pace he's on right now. I mean, he's leading the league in hitting at better than 440. He's leading the league in five categories, and a lot of it is the product of this past weekend where, look, he had 11 RBIs in three games.
Yeah.
He had 11 RBIs in three games. He had three home runs, a triple, doubled his way to a cycle, and it's just him. He was involved in 2017 as a freshman for a team that had a lot of great individual talent, won 36 games, got to the championship, and Mason became a starter on that team. And he was hitting sixth in the lineup for a team that had Ryan Cleveland, Logan Baldwin, Jordan Wren ahead of him. 18, a little more. 19, great season, first team all-conference, double-digit home runs again, hit better than 320. Last year, he was on his way. He was leading the league in RBIs before the shutdown, and now he's returned and been able to capture that same form. Look, we mentioned that he was on an 0-for-9 going into the weekend, but for him, the first few years of his career, he had been really streaky, and he'll tell you the same thing. He could go out and get four hits, and he could go out and get four strikeouts. But what he has done so well the last year plus, he's seeing the ball. He's got his hands where he's very comfortable. He's in a stance where he knows he can do damage and get on base and help his team in any way, shape, and form. But he's been really able to cut down on those strikeouts because he's cut down his swing.
Yeah.
And so many times the ball for him goes out to left center because that's where his swing naturally carries. And when we had talked with Rodney Hennin before the series, especially with the Saturday guy, Tyler O'Clair, whose fastball has what's called arm side run, which means if you're right-handed, it's going to stay on this side. It's going to kind of go like this. If you're the catcher and I'm throwing at you, ball's going to keep going like this. And with Mason's swing, he loves to hit the ball the other way, so you're thinking, okay, that ball's going to hit his barrel at some point. He ends up hitting a home run because of it. But that's just a small snapshot of how much he's improved, how valuable he's been defensively. His arm has improved. He has an outfield assist on the season as well. just really, really special.
Yeah. You can help it become a little bit more special. The Golden Spikes Award put out their fourth round of the Performance of the Week for this past week. And Mason, one of the four that you can go and vote for on Twitter. Justin Armbruster from New Mexico had a 17-strikeout game in 9 innings with the win. Indiana's McCade Brown had 16 strikeouts over 7 innings when he got the win. Cole Coffey, we talked about it. He went 3-for-3 with 3 home runs for Texas State. But I would venture to guess that Mason McWhorter's cycle where he had 2 home runs. You can go and vote for the Golden Spikes Award Performance of the Week at USA Golden Spikes. You can see it on GS Athletics Baseball social media as well. Go and vote. You've got an hour and a half left-ish, so about 10:30 in the morning on Tuesday is when the voting closes. Mason has 50% of the vote right now. Cole Coffey, the next closest, at 40%. But you can go and make sure Mason locks it up by going and voting on social media.
Yeah, that's the more amazing part, a cycle with 2 home runs. I've only ever heard of it once, and that was when Greg Colburn did it for the Arizona Diamondbacks back in 2002 against San Diego. You've heard of cycles with a walk-off home run, cycles with a grand slam, 5, 6 hits or whatever. But to do it with 2 home runs, most total bases by an Eagle since Victor Roach in that 3-homer game against the Citadel back in 2011, love making history.
And we touched on it a little bit throughout the game that you talk about first Eagle since Sean Payne to do that, most total bases for Mason since Victor Roach. That's pretty decent company.
And that all happened in the 2011 season, one of the NCAA tournament berths under Rodney Hennen, won the SoCon championship that year. That team was offensively talented, just like the 2009 team was. Different bats. So you're having teams hit 340 for a season, not just over a weekend, like is more common now. You're excited about where it's going to go, and considering that going to Georgia Tech tomorrow and then Troy this weekend, remember last time we were in Troy, Mason hit 3 home runs in the final game of that series. Ball carries at Troy. They've got the short porch in right field. They've got doubles alley in left center. I have a feeling there's going to be a lot of runs this weekend down at Riddle Pace Field.
Yeah, I would think you're not too wrong about that. But it starts tomorrow. Now, weather permitting, there's supposed to be some discussions this morning between the 210s and head coach Rodney Hennen and Danny Hall for Georgia Tech of whether this game actually happens. Again, I think 95% chance of rain today, 95% chance of rain tomorrow. So some of those discussions will start today. We will let you know as soon as we know if that one gets postponed. But it's supposed to be a 6 o'clock first pitch on Wednesday up at Russ Chandler Stadium against now number 12, Georgia Tech, who had a little bit of a tough weekend against Pitt, fell in 2 out of 3 of those up in Atlanta.
Defense let them down, and that's not something that you're used to hearing for a Georgia Tech team. They gave up 14 unearned runs in 3 games. So even though Pitt went there unranked, you give anybody that many unearned runs, they're going to find a way to beat you. And Sunday was a slugfest. Pitt ended up winning 18-12, but none of those runs were unearned because of 3 early errors.
And then Georgia Southern starts Sun Belt Conference play against the Trojans of Troy. They will, or at least they're scheduled, to take on the Alabama Crimson Tide tonight, 6 o'clock, the first pitch at Riddle Pace Field. And it's a team that's 8-8 right now, has been up and down throughout the season. But taking a look through the stats for Troy so far on the season, you look at some of the same names you've seen from year to year. Drew Frederick leading the team with a 344 average.
Yeah, his 6th year.
Yeah.
He's a Matt Anderson. This is year 6 for Frederick.
Logan Cerny has really been the power threat, 19 RBIs, 5 home runs. You've got 11 RBIs for Dalton Sinkfield. And, of course, you've got to bring up Rigsby Mosley.
The natural. He's one of the best in the league, and he doesn't even look like he tries. He's just so good in every phase of the game. It's why Troy is always amongst the nation's best in offense. We've talked about doubles alley. They're 3rd in the country in doubles going into this week before they play Alabama. And this is Georgia Southern's spring break trip. So they're going to play hopefully Wednesday. And what makes me think that whether it's bad, you'd be more inclined to wait it out because Georgia Southern is staying in Atlanta that night. And then they're going to finish the trip to Troy on Thursday, hopefully get a workout in over at Riddle Pace, and then play the series. So it's the spring break trip while men's golf is hosting the Schenkel with students dispersing and hopefully being safe with just a little bit left in the academic year. I love going to Troy in every sport. And we talked about how well Troy does everything. They just seem to execute everything. They've got a great athletic department. Former Georgia Southern athletic staffer Brent Jones has been the athletic director there for more than a year now. I love seeing Barry and Jerry, especially with baseball, because Barry is going to sing Take Me Out to the Ball Game in the seventh inning stretch.
We will carry it live.
We will, but we'll be outside due to COVID-19 protocols since their press box is entirely self-contained, radio for both, music streaming, scoreboard. Everything is all in the same room, so they're going to have to move us outside, but we will carry. We will carry Barry's edition of the seventh inning stretch, but Take Me Out to the Ball Game. And I personally like Riddle Pace Field a lot.
Yeah.
Because it's unique. It has so many quirks about it. It's not one of those cookie-cutter baseball fields. That's why we like J.I. Clements. It's not a cookie-cutter. There's elements that makes it distinct and unique, the monster. Troy's got one as well. There's in right center field. It's a very short wall in right center, 36 feet high. So if you're going to hit one up there, you can get one out. Mason hit two over it in that game a couple of years ago. He also hit one to left center field for his third home run. Center field is very deep. Ball really jumps to left field, which makes me think that with two teams that can really swing it, that we could see a lot of runs. That means they can't pitch. That just means that the field is going to invite a lot of offense. You talked about Mosley, and Cerny is the one that would be draft eligible after this year. He's one of the few guys that you see now that is a true five-tool player.
Yeah.
He can do everything. Mentioned the five home runs. Three of those were in one game against Youngstown State. He also hit two doubles in that game. Tied a Troy school record for total bases in a game. So dude can do it. And we kind of have the inside track because he and Braden Hayes were teammates at Parkview High. Two-time national championship program. They're just a good program. And I think a lot of Mark Smart. I think he and Rodney Hennen are two peas. I listen to interviews. Their mannerisms. I think that they're two peas. And the fact that they can play each other. I know there's a lot of respect between both and between the programs, and one that always look forward to seeing Troy. Always.
Again, this week starts at Georgia Tech, weather permitting. 6 o'clock, the first pitch from the flats. We'll be on the air at 5:30. This weekend at Troy, 7 o'clock, the first pitch Eastern time. We'll be on the air at 6:30, 4 o'clock on Saturday, and 2 o'clock Eastern time on Sunday against the Trojans.
This is the first time we've been on the road truly all year. We've had a couple of day trips, but this represents the first true road trip, so we're going to have to figure out our food situation. Know a couple places in Troy and Atlanta you can go anywhere.
Yeah, we got to go to Troy. We got to go to, what is it?
Mossy Grove Schoolhouse Restaurant?
Yeah, I can never remember the name. I always call it like Mossy Smith's Schoolhouse Rock.
That's close.
Yeah.
That was the alternate name.
Yeah, close enough.
But you've got some good barbecue down there. You've got a couple of nice lunch buffets down in Troy. And we're going to be there for 4 days.
Yeah, we're going to be there a minute. That's the best part about baseball, though. Like, traveling with football and basketball is great. You get to see a lot of different places, but for baseball, you go and you're there.
Yeah.
And you have so much downtime to be able to go and explore. And obviously, you can't do as much as you normally would do with all the COVID-19 restrictions of having to stay within the bubble. But being able to go and get something to eat and experience something new, I think, is one of the best parts about traveling with baseball.
Football's a one-off. You're there. You're back. Basketball, typically, you're two games in 3 days on the road. You're at somewhere for a day and a half. You're at someone else for a day and a half. Baseball, you feel like you could settle into a place. We'll get to Troy sometime on Thursday, check in, play Friday, play Saturday, of course, leave after Sunday. But you can get a better sense of what the atmosphere is like at a place when you're there for 2-3 days.
Yeah. I think we've been to Troy with baseball whenever they had – like a recruiting weekend for football, and all the recruits were in the same hotel, I think.
And when we were there in 2017, their spring game was that weekend.
That's right. I forgot about that.
Their spring game was that weekend, so Barry McKnight had to call the spring game that morning and then hustle over for baseball that afternoon. And the last time that we were there in 19, Troy was just beating the tar out of the baseball. Catcher Chase Smart was in maybe the heater of heaters. He could not get him out that weekend. He's now the head coach at Charles Henderson right across the street from Troy, which I think is really cool. Mark Smart there. Chase, I just think that's so cool. It also poured when we were there 2 years ago. We had a game suspended, and this gets us back to Mason. One quick story before we finish up. We had a split doubleheader on that Sunday. We had to finish up game two and then played game three. Before the resumption of game two, I ran into Mason McWhorter in the hotel. His dad, Jimmy, had made the trip. And his parents were there for the cycle last weekend. Really special for them. But I talked to them in the hallway for a minute. Mason and dad gave him a hug. This is when you could hug people. Before, we couldn't touch anybody. We couldn't shake hands or fist pound or do anything like that. That day is when Mason went out in the resumed game, hit a triple to tie the game in the seventh, and then he hit the three home runs after. And he said, yeah, I guess I need to hug my dad more often. And when I talked to him after Saturday, after he got the cycle, he said, yeah, hug my dad that morning too.
One that you will cheer for no matter what he does when he leaves Georgia Southern.
So we need to get a Jimmy McWhorter hug in the hopper for this week before we head to Atlanta tomorrow.
Heck, if that's what it is, I might hug Jimmy.
They're back in the state of Georgia now. They were out in Memphis for a couple years, but now they're back in Georgia now. So you might have to stop by.
Let's do it.
All right, Emma.
Wednesday against Georgia Tech, 6 o'clock first pitch, 7 o'clock on Friday against Troy, 4 o'clock on Saturday, 2 o'clock on Sunday. Until tomorrow, for the voice of the Eagles, Danny Reed, this is Colin Lacey saying so long, everybody.
You've been listening to Inside Eagle Nation, powered by Learfield, the official podcast of Georgia Southern Athletics.